This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro. When you need the news, the latest up-to-date happenings in the world of hard rock and classic metal, well, you know where to turn. The one place that's going to give it to you the way you want it. That's right, the Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my good friend, Chris Sinzak.
How's it going?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a chilly day today, but we're getting knee-deep into winter. But happy to be back and do another episode.
I don't know about knee-deep. The sun's shining. I can still see the lawn outside.
It's still cold as shit,
though. Are people out there that are knee-deep this week.
That's true.
So, but at least we ain't got that.
Yeah, that's true. It's just cold.
What we do have is the last couple of weeks, there's been a whole lot of big news stories in the world of rock and roll. And so we like to do new noise because really it's kind of like what we'd be talking about before the show anyway.
Right.
Oh, did you hear about this? Mm-hmm. Oh, did you hear what so-and-so said?
Right.
Oh, man, can you believe what I read about this guy? You know, and this is the kind of stuff we just BS about. So that's why new noise is a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, a lot to touch on. Some happy news, some definite sad news. And we'll get to that in a few minutes. But always like doing these, and got a lot to talk about today.
Awesome. But before we get to all that, here's something that's not new news. We need reviews. Well, I'm a poet, and I didn't even know it.
Oh, boy.
And we've got some this week, and they're sweet and awesome. We got two of them. We like to get them from the Apple Podcast reviews. We like to get those Facebook recommendations, and we like Podchaser reviews. We'll take them any way you got them, and we got some good ones right here. First one's an Apple Podcast review. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars. Oh, yeah. This one's entitled, These Guys Bring It Every Week. If you like hard rock and heavy metal, this is the podcast for you. These guys bring it every week. Quality interviews, discussions, and music all in one place. The audio quality is excellent, and they are true professionals.
I had no idea.
They always seem to get a Kiss reference in somewhere along the way, which is always a good thing. I've been listening since the beginning, and it's one of my favorite podcasts. It's like hanging out with your buds and talking music. Download it and give it a listen.
And that comes from KissFan 1969 on Apple.
So. Right on.
Thank you very much.
From the very beginning, and somehow we tricked him into believing we are true professionals.
I know, yeah. If you've been here from the beginning, you surely know that's not the case. But thank you for the nice review.
Yeah. You got to kind of, you know, embellish on the reviews a little bit because you know it's for other people wanting to check out the show. Yeah, wink. These guys are true professionals.
Yeah, we've had very good luck with our reviews, so keep them coming, guys.
It's got to be luck.
Yeah.
All right, here's one. Oh, nice. It's a Facebook recommendation. Comes to us from another longtime friend, Todd Cunningham.
Love that guy.
Yeah, me too. He's awesome. Always shares the episodes. Always comments on the Facebook page. Man, Todd's a cool dude. This is what he says about us on the Facebook. Great podcast and great dudes. I've learned so much from them. I've also got to know about some great new and old bands. And that's what it's all about.
Very nice.
That's what it's
all
about.
Thank you, Todd. And yeah, Todd's been with us pretty much since the beginning, too. Yeah, it's amazing.
For sure. Man, the longtime friendships we've made over this just still to this day blows my mind.
Yeah, it's wild to still see names sharing every episode just, you know, that go back, you know, almost 9 years now.
Yeah, so, remember high-fiving over 50 listeners?
Oh, yeah. I thought we were the shit.
We were.
And we were.
Man, some people like to skip over this beginning part, you know, but it's always a lot of fun for us, and it's always a great way just for us to say thank you to everybody that does these things for us. You know, we're not asking for money or nothing.
No, we love getting the support.
Yeah, and we dig it. That's the reason we keep doing it, because we know other people are digging it too.
And the other thing we've liked to do for all these years is do Geeks of the Week, the people that share on Facebook and retweet on Twitter the previous week's episodes, which would be, this is going to be for 2 weeks of episodes because we were really short on recording time the last week. So this is going to be the people that shared and retweeted the best of 2019 and the album anticipation episodes. So I've got a lot lot of names to read off here.
You bring your inhaler with you?
I should have. And some of these would be repeated for both weeks, so I didn't try to add them twice, but still a lot of names.
Process.
So.
Nice.
Geeks of the Week this week are Simon Cap, Mike Grabowski, Rock and Ron Runyon, Decibel Geek TV, Mercury Arc, Matt Ashcraft, Eric Luzier, Brian Knapp, Paul Smith, Destroyer Sr., In Obscuria Podcast, Shay Hargett, James Nicholson, Aaron Baker, The Bakery Podcast, Baco, Brad Schick, Shane Aber, Todd Cunningham, Andrew Jacobs. Christina Green, Alan Tate, Christopher Stokes, David Cathy, James West, Joseph Capone, Tom Cullen, Jay Shabluski, Kristen Schimbeck, Wayne Cross.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We killed him.
Having a hard time. Brian Knapp, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Adam Cox, Rob Harris, Trevor McDougall, David Glenn, Growing Up Rock Podcast, Scott Crouch, Mike Parnell, Brad Kalmanson, Bill Elam, Brant Cattell, Sean Cullen, Mikhail Burrell, Rodney Dixon, Warren Edward, LaRue Baker. Paul J. Kane, Michael Bartley, John Phillips, Todd Rogers, Kiss Army Omaha, Joe Lescon, Mark Alton Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Brooke, Chris, 19, Robin the Hood, Eladio, J.J. Mack, Mermels, Vet, Halen, Trunk Nation, Chris McGowan, Daniel Lee, Jeff Taylor, Twisted Kister, Andrew McNeese, and as always, the Mooger Fooger.
Damn. Wow, took my breath away.
Yeah.
Hey, you match your Chiefs hat.
I do? Yeah, I probably do. Red in the face.
As always, thank you for everybody sharing last week and the week before's episode. If you guys want to become Geeks of the Week and you don't know how to do it, that's how. You get out there, you share this week's episode. Next week, you're a Geek of the Week, just like that. Hey, I want to give a shout-out real quick. There's a lot of really good podcasts that share our episodes that get listed all the time. I've been listening to Kevin Williams' In Obscuria podcast.
Yeah, it's
and
really
man,
good.
Have I been digging it.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Yeah, I got to keep my CD want list close.
Yeah.
Because he's playing such obscure stuff that I find myself adding bands and CDs to my list all the time.
Yeah, great show.
Never heard of this band. Now I got to check them out.
Yep. Good he's stuff. Taken to it like a duck to water.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we can just get right to the news then, right?
Yep, we can talk. This is the stuff that's been over the last couple of weeks that's kind of piqued our interest that we'd like to talk about.
Well, I know the first one, top of the list for sure. The biggest news story of 2020 so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, Neil Peart passed away.
Man, that sucks. I didn't even know he was sick.
That's pretty much the prevailing logic over most people is he was really private. So, you know, and I'd kind of try to match up timelines because there's a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, they called it quits in 2015. That must have been when he got diagnosed, but actually it wasn't. He got diagnosed in 2016, but he, from what I've read, because, you know, there's like much more hardcore Rush fans than us that know everything.
Sure.
He was getting really bad carpal tunnel towards the end of his time drumming and just decided that, you know, his skills are diminishing and he doesn't want to go out like certain other people we'll talk about today where they stay at the party too long when they can't do what they used to do.
Right.
So hats off to him for that. But I don't think very many people knew he was sick with something like this. So Rush put out the statement. It is with broken hearts and the deepest sadness that we must share the terrible news that on Tuesday, our friend, soul brother, and bandmate of over 45 years, Neil, lost his incredibly 3.5-year battle with brain cancer. It was 3.5 years he was fighting this. This one hit me harder than I expected it to. I'm not a Rush fan on the level of Kiss, Alice Cooper, Thin Lizzy, or anything like that, but I, over the last decade, I've gotten much more into them. And wife and I got to see them live finally on the Clockwork Angels tour. And it just seeing them live kind of helps drive it home on how amazing that band was and how amazing of a musician he was. And one of the best music documentaries is Rush Beyond the Lighted Stage.
Yeah.
You can watch that on Netflix for free. And I think it's funny how documentaries, at least for me, can tend to humanize a band more and will pique your interest more.
Definitely.
And then you check out the music
because
you get to see them as people. And that documentary really goes in depth with the band's history and also their personal lives. And most people probably know that years back, I think it's like his daughter died in a car accident and then his wife died, I think, of cancer. And he had to come back from that. And like he stopped drumming. He went on a motorcycle ride around the country just to try to get his head back in the right place.
Yeah.
And he came.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, and he overcame that. Or, you know, I guess you never overcome it, but he learned how to cope with it. I don't know how anyone can do that. But, you know, he's a misunderstood guy. You know, because he was viewed as like a sourpuss, didn't want to mingle with the fans and stuff like that. And he says in the documentary, he's like, it's more of me being shy than being mean. He said, he's like, I just don't view my, you know, he's like, having somebody tell me I'm the greatest just makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. You know? I can imagine that could be true, you know, if you're a truly humble person. And I mean, it's hard to argue that he's not the greatest of all time, you know, so I'm sure.
Greatest rock drummer ever.
Over and over and over, people are coming up going, you're the best drummer ever.
Yeah.
You know, that's got to be weird.
And he probably was. But he's one of those artists where he would have been happy just, you know, being a middling musician as long as he could play drums and make a living at it. But he didn't care about stardom at all. He really didn't.
Here's the other thing I'm always going to remember about Neil, and it's not just his drumming, but obviously that's the forefront. I mean, there's been so many awesome tributes and awesome things that rock stars and so many people, different walks of life, have said, you know, about how he's been an impact on their life. And as a drummer, most definitely, hard to argue, the greatest drummer of all time. But what people forget is what an awesome songwriter the guy was, and what a cool lyricist was, too.
Yeah, he's on a different level for writing lyrics. I remember Getty in the documentary was like, you know, not always easy to sing that many words in some of these songs, but I really appreciated them.
Yeah, stuff that makes you think, makes you wonder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, very thought-provoking lyrics. And the song, and this is not... You know, when they get into like Bytor and the Snow Dog and all that gets a little off the track for me.
Right.
But I think his crowning achievement lyrically, as far as something I could relate to, was the song Subdivisions.
Great lyrics in that song.
Because it's, you know, and I don't know about you, but like I was never the most popular kid in school. I was more of an outcast, I never really hung with the cool kids. I was always a little bit, and I was real quiet, introverted. So my circle was really small. And that song is basically about being shunned by the popular kids in high school and what it does to you and how you have to exist in that bubble until you get out of high school. And it's written in such a way that anyone can get it.
Right.
You know,
that's cool.
That song, had a big impact on me because it was like, wow, you don't feel quite as alone. And I get the feeling maybe Neil was coming from that same place when he was growing up because he was viewed as kind of a weird kid from what I've read.
And that would go to explain why he isn't so social later in life.
Yeah, it was an antisocial person his whole life, I think. Even Getty and Alex, when they first got out of bed, like, this guy's weird, but he can play drums really well.
Yeah, well, and if it's those guys saying it, that really means something.
Yeah, when Getty and Alex are the cool kids, it's you know you're a little odd, but no, we're just kidding. But I mean, but Rush is one of those bands that I think it took until the end of their career to finally start getting the due they deserve.
Absolutely,
you know,
but survived all them years.
Yeah,
and one of the most well-regarded bands out there. You know, if somebody says they're a Rush fan, they're not like a half-ass Rush fan. They're all in on them.
And, and I think Clockwork Angels is their best work. That's their last album to me. I know everybody, and they're like Kiss. They have so many different facets of, you know, music that they've done that you can kind of take and pick and choose what you like. Some people love the Power Windows era with all the keyboards, and other people like 2112 and,
2112 and Caress of Steel.
Yeah. And we both also love the John Rutsey era, the first album. But you talk about a band with an amazing career. You know, Neil really left his mark, but I just think it's one of those things where I kind of got more into learning about him as a person over from that documentary and seeing him live. And it just, when it got announced, it fucking hit me like a ton of bricks, man. I was just like, I literally teared up. I was like, I'm thinking, you know, it's sad. And usually with celebrity deaths, I don't get like that. I'm like, oh, that's a shame. And that sucks. But
when it's an awesome rock
this time, it really got to me. Like, I felt like I had lost somebody I actually knew, even though I'd never met the man, you know.
Well, you know, and that's the cool thing about rock music. It really, truly lives forever, you know, through shows like the Decibel Geek Podcast, through albums that you can buy and order yourself, you know. Neil Peart never truly dies because 20 years from now, there's going to be some kid that discovers an old Rush album somewhere, hears it on his whatever they're listening to music on in the future, and they're going to hear that and be totally inspired by it.
Yeah. One of my, I saw a group that, and you know, it was a sad day when we found out, but at the end of the day, there was a tweet that somebody had shared and I saw it. It's from somebody, I can't remember who, but it was, it gave me a nice little laugh at the end of the day. It said, something like, I have to wonder if he's somewhere chuckling, knowing that there's 10,000 bands playing live tonight trying to figure out an easy Rush song.
No, we can't play that one. He wasn't on that song.
Yeah.
That was the first drummer.
And Tony Higbee, you know, who plays in Kiefer's band.
Yeah.
He had a great Facebook status where he said something like, I'm waiting for the inevitable news that a cover band played Working Man as a tribute to Neil Peart.
Right.
And the ensuing humiliation that they're going to get on the internet.
Yep, most definitely.
But yeah, rest in peace, Neil Peart. Oh, and if you want to hear a really cool tribute, I just got started on it last night because it just came out, but as of this recording, Rock and Metal Combat podcast did, it's like a 3 hour plus tribute talk about Neil Peart and Rush.
Nice.
So yeah, check that out for sure.
Cool. I definitely will.
It's more than just dick jokes and mom jokes this time. It's actual tribute to Neil Peart.
That's cool.
We love that. Love Ian and Ralph.
Forward to that.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I mean,
bummer. I hate it.
Yeah, it's a bummer, and you know, it's going to be sad when Geddy or Alex goes too. We're losing our heroes at an alarming rate,
left
people.
And right. You know, in the last couple of years, I mean, geez, we're all getting older, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, is this what happens when you start getting older? All your heroes start kicking off.
Well, and also death anniversaries around the same week of Neil Peart was Phil Lynott and David Bowie.
Yeah,
all lost around the same week in January. So yeah, we're all
cherish them while you got them.
We're all getting older. All right, so ready to go on to the next one?
Sure.
Get the depressing part out.
Yeah.
We can have some laughs from here on. Speaking of laughs, Glenn Danzig has an Elvis covers album coming out in April. I thought this was
Heavy
a joke headline.
Elvis.
I thought it was a joke headline, but it's kind of funny that it's actually happening. And I
well, I know back in the day he had that Thrall Demon Sweat Live EP.
Yeah.
And he did a cover of Elvis's song Trouble.
Right.
Which is one of Elvis's more rockin' songs as far as Elvis goes. And they were able to take that and add them distorted guitars, and it sounded like a cool hard rock song.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I mean, I can't imagine Danzig's going to be doing, you know, Teddy Bear or, you know, some of them other kind of goofy, poppy Elvis songs. So he's got to be finding like deeper cut songs that could possibly be turned into a heavy metal song.
Well, let's look at the story a little bit.
Motley Crue did it with Jailhouse Rock, and that was cool.
That was okay. Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
Whatever cool Elvis covers do you know of? I can't really think of
I Want You, She's So Heavy by Hailstorm.
That's the Beatles.
That's the beat. I'm thinking of the Beatles. I was just reading a thing about Helter Skelter. I'm off. Elvis covers that are there's not
a
many.
Lot of them.
No.
Yeah, none that I can really think of off the top of my head, other than that Danzig song. So apparently he's cornered the market.
Well, he said it's called Danzig Sings Elvis. It's coming out in April.
It's already made for like a Vegas residency.
Yeah,
that's the title of that.
Well, it's here we go. It says in 2018, Danzig told Full Metal Jackie's syndicated radio show that he wanted to play a few intimate shows in support of Danzig Sings Elvis. Every time I have downtime or if I was working on soundtrack stuff, I would just record another Elvis track or two. So what started out as an EP, I now have more than enough for a full album. I have extra songs that won't even make it on the record, so I'm really going to have to sit down and pick the songs that I really want on the record. But it came out really good. I can't wait for everyone to hear it. A lot of people ask me about it all the time while I'm on the road, so it'll be nice to get it out and do some of those little intimate shows I was talking about.
That's pretty cool. Like I said, as long as he picked the right ones, found the right ones, I guess, and rock them out,
and they
like
mentioned,
he did with that other song.
Yeah, they mentioned his previously covered Trouble, and he also recorded a version of Let Yourself Go for Skeletons in 2015.
I don't know that one.
He said, Elvis,
I probably do if I heard it.
That album's terrible. I remember we both gave it like a cursory listen when it came out, and we both didn't like it. Says,
no, I'm talking about the Elvis song.
Well, I know, but that album, though.
Oh, okay.
It's on that album.
Yeah.
He says, Elvis is actually how I got into music. When I was a kid, I was cutting school pretending I was sick, and I would lie at home watching old movies, and Jailhouse Rock came on, and Elvis I was like, I want to do this. This is great.
You'd never know that by listening to Danzig, would you?
No, I always thought, yeah. I mean,
he was always little metal Elvis.
Yeah.
Little so, muscular I mean, metal Elvis.
But it's one of those things where people have always said, oh, Danzig should do an Elvis album, and now he's actually doing
right.
it.
Right. I suppose, yeah, he's probably heard it a million times. You should do more of them Elvis songs. That Trouble one was really cool.
Yeah. I mean,
there's really not a lot of Elvis songs that lend themselves to metal.
Remember that one that it was like it was a cover that they put out of Elvis of a it was like an Elvis release, a little more conversation.
That's a kind of a
or a little less conversation.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Like they did a dance version of it or something.
Yeah.
But I always thought that could benefit with like heavy guitars on it.
Heavier side of Elvis?
Oh boy. The Beatles one was a push. I don't know if I want to do an Elvis one. I'm really not a fan of Elvis. Never was.
Gotta respect him.
I respect him, but I don't listen to him.
No.
All right. So going on to another legendary artist, Ozzy Osbourne recently put out a collaboration with Elton John. It's the title track from his next album.
Remember back not too long ago when I was talking about the Ozzy article that came out that said he was on his deathbed?
Yeah.
And I saw it and I hoped it was fake news and it turned out it was.
Yeah.
This one I saw that he was doing a song with Elton John and I hoped it was fake news and it turned out it was real.
There's some good Elton John stuff.
Not this.
This song isn't one of them.
Not this.
It's one of those great ideas, bad execution deals. Because I think it could have been cool
if Elton John was playing electric guitar.
No,
a BC Rich.
Well, this is where we're divided because there's a good number of Elton John songs that I like.
See, Elton John's a guy that you could take and make a heavy metal covers album for.
Sure,
yeah, definitely.
Vince Neil's cover of "Bitches Back" is amazing.
Oh yeah, totally. I love that.
I mean, But you have to like some Elton John stuff, right?
I like it when guys do hard rock versions of his songs.
You don't like Tiny Dancer?
It's Tiny Dancer, all right.
Wow.
I mean, it's a beautiful song, well written. I can't, you know.
Candle in the Wind, you don't think that's a good song?
I mean.
Saturday Night's All Right for Fight?
Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting's good. I like that. Mark Slaughter did a cool cover of that on one of them tribute albums.
Right now, diehard Elton John's fans' heads are exploding. I don't like Elton John, but I like the Mark Slaughter cover of it.
It's the truth.
I like the Mark Slaughter cover too. Why can't we like both? But I think this could have been cool. Well, I'm a ballads guy. I like poppy ballads, and it's not exactly the worst written song, but it doesn't. It's just both singers' voices are well past their prime, and I thought Elton was going to sound way better than Ozzy on this, but honestly, they both sound pretty bad.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, oh God, no, you know, what is this? This is a bad idea.
It feels like a clickbait song. Basically.
As I listened to it and didn't like it,
yeah.
It made me appreciate Under the Graveyard all that much more.
Oh, yeah. I think the other two songs that have been released are much better than this.
But what dawned on me listening to it was clearly Ozzy Osbourne's a fan of Elton John.
Oh, sure.
You know, fellow countryman, probably somebody he met when he was very young and looked up to, somebody who was already there as Sabbath was coming up. You know those two had to have
right around
paths.
They came up kind of around the same
yeah,
time.
So, yeah, so, you know, he was obviously somebody he respected. He probably had the opportunity to do it and said, you know, I ain't going to get any younger. Well, you know, if I get a chance to do a song with Elton John, I'm going to do it.
Or Sharon just said, this is newsworthy. You guys need to do a song together.
Well, Ozzy wouldn't say no to it just because it's his hero. So,
well, and Ozzy never says no to Sharon anyway. That's why he's still out there. Sorry, but he's incredibly whipped.
Yeah, true. True.
But he wouldn't be alive today for the last 30 years without her either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I know about that. Saw it, seen it. I guess I understand it, but that doesn't mean I like it.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed. His voice is so processed on it.
That's the one thing, even on the other songs that I like, that I hate.
Yeah.
It's so auto-tuned.
It's Ozzy Bot.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'd rather just give it to me the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's not perfect, but it's rock and roll. Who cares? When did rock and roll have to become perfect?
This album produced by Russia because it's loaded with bots.
Mm. Yeah. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Hopefully the rest of the album kicks ass.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, I'm excited to hear the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I want to make a full judgment.
Don't pass judgment on Ozzy yet. He's earned our patience and respect.
Yeah.
Enough to give him a chance.
Yeah. As long as, just don't go back to reality TV, please.
No more songs with Elton John either.
All right. So the next story. Motley Crue's Vince Neil is killing it while working with trainers and nutritionists in preparation for the stadium tour.
I'm glad to hear that.
Me too.
I'm glad to hear that because, you know, a lot of people gave Vince Neil a lot of shit in 2019.
And, raising my hand.
And a lot of it was kind of asked for, you know.
For sure.
When you come out on stage looking like that, you got to expect people are going to say something. So if Vince Neil's killing it and getting himself back into shape, I say awesome. Come back and show everybody that talked shit about you in 2019. Come back as a well-oiled machine. Really kick its ass this time.
Well, for people paying minimum of $250 for this tour, he damn well should be in shape and do well on this because they deserve that.
I know. A good friend of mine called me the other day and was like, hey, one of the perks of having season tickets for the Titans is that you get pre-sale on everything else that goes on there. And he had sent me a picture of the Motley Crue Def Leppard thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, how much are tickets? I'm thinking, well, maybe he gets a deal or something.
Yeah.
$90 for way, 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 way up there.
Which is $250 after fees.
Right. it was over $100.
Good Lord. And I didn't have this on our docket, but Tuck Smith just got added as the opening band. Tuck was the singer for the Biters.
Okay. Know? Yeah.
And he's got a new project now, and I believe they're signed to Motley's management company, so they got the opening slot. But, I mean, essentially they'll be playing while people are parking.
Right.
But
yeah.
But still a good break for those guys. We've hashed this tour over and over again. But, yeah, just, you know.
I mean, who?
I've seen these bands in better days. I don't need to see them again.
But the thing is the price.
Yeah.
The price is ridiculous for normal people. For Motley Crue fans,
yeah.
You know, we're not all billionaires.
Yeah.
So...
And they're bragging about all these sellouts, but they're not sellouts. It's the resellers that are buying all the tickets.
Is this going to be known as the great pre-sale crash of 2020? Is this what puts scalpers out of business forever?
No, never.
Like, they take such a hit on this?
It would take a lot of people not buying.
Sinks them all.
I guess we'll see.
So the bots buy up all the tickets, and then come time to, you know, make more money on them. They lose big.
Well,
it's like a stock market crash for scalpers.
Nostalgia's a gold mine these days. People want to relive their youth.
I'd like to go see it. I wouldn't mind going. I really wouldn't. But I'm not paying $90
but there's
to
a lot
sit
of people
up
that
at
will.
The top of the stadium.
I know, but I still think the shows will be well attended because there's a giant marketing push behind it. You know, this is Live Nation's putting this together. So, and they're booking it. They're basically promoting it like they did the Guns N' Roses Stadium Tour.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, this is not as unique as that. You know? Motley's only been gone for, 5 years? That's different than Slash, Axl, and Duff getting back together after, 30?
Right. That was a way bigger
deal. That was more of a unique situation. So I think they're banking on the amount of having this many artists together for selling those. But
we'll get the Def Leppard fans. We'll get the Poison fans. We'll get the Motley Crue fans.
Yeah.
But
aside from Motley Crue, who's been out of the game for 5 years, the rest of these bands tour all the time. And you can see them way cheaper.
Well, Poison really hasn't. I mean,
not so much Poison, but... At least every 2 to 3 years, they do a tour, it seems like. So, and they just did an extensive tour with Cheap Trick. They played every shed in America, basically. So I don't know that there's really the draw that they think there's going to be. We'll find out. Depends on how many people want to buy those reseller tickets.
I guess we'll see. And how do they make money off it? If they paid, let's say they pay $200 for a ticket.
Who, the resellers?
Yeah, when it's first on
sale.
Yeah,
and they sell it for $400.
I just don't see...
You sell enough of those, you make up for the dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll still make money. And they work with Ticketmaster. It's shady as shit.
I'm telling you, it's going to be the great bot crash of 2020. It's going to go down in history.
I'd love to see the bubble burst on this shit because it's one of those things where like the last money these artists are making is on tour. And they're killing themselves with the way this is going.
And killing the fans.
Yeah.
For those of us who can't, legitimately, people that can't afford to go to their concerts, even though they may be the biggest Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison fans in the entire world.
Well, you're basically turning your investors against you.
Yeah.
You know, and if people are like, well, fuck it, I'm not going to go.
People remember that shit, you know? It's Def Leppard, my favorite band, can't afford to go see them. That sucks. You know, bad impression.
I'm going to trim out that little bit of audio where you just said Def Leppard is your favorite band.
Oh, no.
And I'm going to send it to Cobras and Fire and let them play
it. Don't you dare.
Let them play it and then put your laugh at the end
of
it.
Don't you dare.
All right. So enough about Motley Crue. But best of luck to Vince. It would be nice to see him get his act together.
I hope he does. Yeah. I hope he comes and sticks it in everybody's face.
I love a comeback story.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm still skeptical, but we'll see.
He knows what he's got to do.
Yeah. All right.
He's going to come back and everyone's going to be like, holy shit.
Yeah. Here's something that it's a little sad, but I don't think we're surprised. David Lee Roth said in an interview that Eddie Van Halen, quote, is not doing well.
I've been hearing that from all different places for a while now.
And he didn't elaborate on that. He just said Ed's not doing well. So,
does that mean well enough to live, well enough to
perform?
You know, that can be taken so many different ways because it's so vague.
I don't have a good feeling about it. I really don't. I wouldn't be shocked if we lose him in the next year. I think the cancer is worse than people are letting on. And I know there's certain sites that are blowing it up and exaggerating things, you know, like he's on his deathbed, just like the Ozzy thing.
Right.
But I mean, it's been confirmed that he's been going for, you know, treatments on his tongue again. And, you know, it's one of those things where cancer usually starts coming back chronically. That's not a good sign. And in the last few pictures,
it takes a little piece of you every time.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
So, I'm not trying to start a rumor or anything. This is just my gut instinct. I don't think he's doing well. I think they would have
done
more.
We've been hearing all this for a while now.
Yeah.
From all different sources, all different guesstimators, I suppose, you know. And, you know, it kind of takes you back to the Ozzy thing where Ozzy's had to have gone into this last album with the feeling of this may very well be my last. You know, I really got to do something special with this, you know. And then you look at a guy like Eddie Van Halen, maybe he's not able to. You know, obviously Van Halen split up.
Yeah.
But that means that his last legacy would be the last Van Halen album that came out. And I was just listening back to that a week or so
ago. A Different Kind of Truth?
A Different Kind of Truth.
Well, I guess the live one technically, but...
Well, no, I'm talking studio albums.
Yeah.
And I think it's a damn good album.
It's a great way to go out.
It's really a great way to go out. If that's the final one, I'm glad that was it.
When did A Different Kind of Truth come out? How long ago was that?
It's been a while.
Was that
I know that.
2010, maybe? I think that was before our podcast. I'm pretty sure.
Right around the same time, I think, as Decibel Geek started.
Somewhere around that time. So it's been a long time. It's like, that's another thing. I think if his health had been holding up, there probably may have been more material being made.
I would have liked that. Because I like that album, and I like to see what they could have done had they kept going.
I tell you what, I'm certain I don't want him to leave anytime soon, but I'm wondering if it's going to be a situation like it's been with Prince when he does go, that whoever has his estate is going to start really releasing stuff from the vault. Because you know he's got a massive amount of material in his vault.
Yeah, because it's his studio.
Yeah.
You know, everything they recorded was in his studio, so you know that there's a ton of stuff.
Like, they could release more Van Halen albums purely from probably what he's got in his vault.
Wow. I still don't look forward to the day.
No, I don't either. I'm just saying, he was such a perfectionist that there's probably amazing stuff sitting on reel-to-reels that has never been heard by anybody.
That's going to be wild someday when we're, you know, in our 90s, that there's going to be all this stuff that was released vault style over the years.
There's going to be more of that as it goes.
As, you know, the legends all pass away.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked, you know. I wonder who, and that's another good question. I'm guessing Wolfie would probably inherit most of that stuff.
I would sure think so.
Yeah. And being that he's, like, there wouldn't have been a last few Van Halen tours if it wasn't for Wolfie being part of the band.
True.
Like, I'm convinced of that.
You don't think they'd have done it at all?
No.
No.
No, not especially with Mike.
What is the problem with Mike and the Van Halen brothers? I never really
Mike basically sided with Sammy.
With Sammy.
Yeah.
So that's what's kept him out all
It's along. Guilt by association.
Wow.
Which isn't fair to Michael Anthony.
Which, when you really look into the story, there really isn't, you know, a whole lot to be mad at Sammy about in that situation with him leaving Van Halen.
it's a lot of it's just all the trash talk. I mean, that's I think it's one of those things, and Eddie Van Halen and Alex to an extent hold grudges. Like, they don't forget shit. And
well, I guess.
I mean, that's been proven over the years.
If you can give up your grudges against David Lee Roth and work with him again, you should be able to give up your grudges for just about anything.
There was a massive payday behind giving up the Roth grudge, I'm sure. And I'm sure they did. They still probably didn't like working with him.
Yeah.
I'm convinced. I don't.
I'm sure.
You want to see something super awkward? I don't know if you saw that, because, like, you know, I did a deep dive into Van Halen all over again when A Different Kind of Truth came out, like on YouTube. I looked for anything. And there was, I don't think the record company put this out or something, but it was like a black and white new interview where David Lee Roth interviews the brothers.
Oh, wow.
And it's basically like 30 minutes of watching the brothers squirm as David Lee Roth asks them questions and brings up stories that they don't want brought back up again. And you can tell they just don't like each other. Like, I think
oil and water. I always have been.
I think Roth likes being around them, but I don't think the feeling is mutual.
I have the most fun when I hang out with you guys. Yeah sure, Dave. Yeah, well, this is great, man.
You could watch that interview on YouTube. You'll laugh your ass because you're like, God, they're just squirming the whole time. Like, can this be over soon, please? Like, we did their album with you. Do we have to sit in a room with you any longer?
Right.
But
it's like, hey, remember that time that I did California Girls as a solo song when I was still in the band Van Halen?
Yeah, we loved that, Dave. Yeah, that was fucking asshole.
Yeah, that was awesome, wasn't it? All right, yeah.
But, you know, it was that combustibility that made it a great band, though. I mean,
sometimes
a lot of yin and yang.
You need that.
Yeah, the friction added a great material.
Really seem to have it. You know, the best bands.
Sometimes anger can be a great driving force creatively.
Or competition or everything else. You know, you want to contribute more than the other guy. So in that quest to outdo the other,
one-upping each other,
you come up with some amazing shit.
I was listening to Pat Francis's Rock Solid podcast. This is years ago. They did like a Van Halen discography discussion, and it was mostly about the new album at the time. That's when it came out.
Right.
And Mike Schmidt, not the baseball player, but he's a comedian in L.A., came on, and he's a massive Van Halen fan. And he's like one of us, where he'll like read stuff into things that aren't really there just for his own, you know, fantasy.
Right.
And they're talking about different things, and he's like talking about favorite solos, and he's talking about the solo for Mean Street. So, you know, when it's got the little talking part in the middle of it, or, you know, that turns the hunter into hunted or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh,
yeah.
Lord, strike that poor boy down. And he's like, when you listen to Eddie break into that solo, he sounds fucking pissed off. And he's like, his fantasy was that Eddie hated Dave's speaking part in the middle of the song, and is his way of just going off on the guitar in aggression. It's like, because it's one of the angriest sounding guitar solos of all time.
It's like Van Halen fan fiction. I
know. I know. I laughed so hard when I heard that. But I was like, it's probably true. That's the funniest part.
Possibly.
It's like, I hate this motherfucker. Let me start playing. But I don't know. Van Halen's one of the great dramas of rock and roll history.
Yeah.
You know. And I noticed we seem to like bands that have the drama.
Because they all have it.
That's true. But like, some of our favorites always have a lot of behind the scenes shit going on. Yeah. Van Halen is probably close to the top of that list.
I guess that's why we care about them so much. We're worried about their well-being and their mental health.
But
and their physical health.
So let's segue from that into some other sad news. David Lee Roth recently started his Las Vegas residency.
Oh, man.
And the results, at least for the first night, were not good overall.
We were talking about this not too long ago when the video came out of the rehearsal, and I was all, hey, don't worry about Dave. This is just practice. He's coming back when the real deal happens. That's when, you know, that's when the magic will really be. This is just rehearsal. Don't sweat it.
Mm-hmm.
Diamond Dave's got it under control. And then this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing.
Ye of too much faith.
Yeah.
Not good. But then again, is it really surprising? I mean, his voice hasn't been great in a long time.
But I think the thing to kind of look at here is this isn't – the songs are great. The songs are what's important here. You know, they're amazing songs, and it's kind of a novelty to see Dave out doing these songs, and I think especially his solo stuff, because he's been playing Van Halen songs for all these past years that they've been doing it. It's the most recent thing he's done is Van Halen, so you haven't really had the chance to hear the David Lee Roth solo stuff, and that's cool. And the novelty of it is you're not going to see Dave pull off this awesome, you know, 1989 performance.
Yeah.
You're just going because they're awesome songs and it's Dave and it's kind of cool, I guess. I don't know.
Let me preface this with, I don't hate anyone who goes and sees David Lee Roth perform. Same as with Kiss.
Yeah.
I went and saw Kiss because I wanted to see what the show looked like and mostly hang out with my friends. So I get it. Some people view it as a night out to have beer and hang out with friends. They don't take it nearly as seriously as we
right.
do. With that said, if you perform at this level, that's a problem. I mean, because these are people that paid good money to see you perform.
Right.
Man. And we talked about Neil Peart earlier in the show. You know, he had carpal tunnel setting in, and he knew it was time to get off the stage because he couldn't do what he used to do. David Lee Roth, there's no way David Lee Roth is hurting for money. The man has got to have more money than even his grandchildren can spend.
Yeah.
This has to just be a purely an ego thing where he can't let it go. It's all he knows. He has to perform.
Then isn't it for the love of the performing? Isn't it for the love of the music? Isn't it for the love of the fans?
I get it. But at the same time, this is the disconnect, though, is I don't – if I'm him and I see myself sounding like that, like, I don't know how you can be like, that's fine, I'll go back out tomorrow and do it again. To me, I would be like, man, I really don't have it anymore. I got to stop.
Yeah, I guess you don't really think about that perspective. Like, as I'm watching it, you know, it's like, oh, man, not great. But when he's watching it,
does he think that's
good?
Because
you know the next day he's got to be watching that video. How does Dave feel when he's watching that video? Is he going, sweet, you know?
Yeah, how can you justify thinking that's good?
Or is he going, ooh, I gotta work on some stuff.
And that's,
but he already had the rehearsal, so all this stuff should have been
like he has
should have been worked out by now.
He has to know that that's where his abilities lie. But that's where I don't understand. And this is, he can do whatever the hell he wants. He's David Lee Roth. But if I'm him, I don't go on stage. I just don't. I mean, I would rather, as a Van Halen and David Lee Roth fan, I would rather go watch him do a spoken word performance where he talks about his career and they show old video clips or something and he talks about, okay, what you saw here was blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I'd rather hear from him as a person than see him go up on stage caterwauling and trying to do stuff he can't do anymore. Because I think it just tarnishes his legacy.
Right. It's kind of like the instance of, you know, versus, like you said, people just want to go have a few beers,
yeah,
have a good time.
And that's fine.
Hear some awesome Van Halen songs and be able to say the next day you went and seen David Lee Roth, you know.
But
that's great. But if you are a huge Van Halen fan,
yeah,
and you've been singing the praises to your nephew all these years, or your son or your daughter or whoever,
yeah,
and the opportunity comes to see David Lee Roth in this state that he's in right now, how he's performing, do you take the kid to see him?
No.
No.
You show him YouTube videos from the 70s.
Yes.
I think I was talking to somebody recently that I've just kind of come to the acceptance of I will probably go see maybe a quarter of the people that I would normally like to see live because I know that I'm going to get something good out of it.
Right.
And it just because I don't want to go up there and watch somebody struggle like that.
Well, and it's like Kiss and Def Leppard and Motley Crue and anybody that's out there using tapes nowadays. This is the alternative to it. When you've got somebody and you're on a smaller stage like that and you've got somebody right up in the front row shining that camera right up at you, picking up your vocals as they're happening right there within a couple of feet, it's you got to be able to sound great in that instance nowadays because you can't hide it. Used to be where a band could get up there and just kind of, you know, go through the motions and kind of pull it off,
right,
you know, because nobody was filming it from a foot away for the world to see the next day on the YouTube.
And there's like people, and this is where I'm gonna back up my point, because I posted a video recently of the first night of David Lee Roth's set, and all I said was great googly moogly because it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
And it led to a lot of comments of people, you know, most people backing me up going, wow, that's not good. But then I don't understand this, and some of you listening are my friends that have done this that are trying to come to Dave's rescue over this and giving every excuse in the book on why this should be acceptable.
I'll tell you exactly what it is.
See what?
We love David Lee Roth too much.
Well, it's just like, I don't think Dave is worried about what Chris in Nashville thinks about his performance.
No, I'm sure not.
He's making shit tons of money, and also when you're and he knows better than anyone else, when you're in the public eye, you get scrutinized. That's just the way it is.
Right. I'm sure he always has.
But all these people that are like white knighting for David Lee Roth or for Paul Stanley that for that matter. And it's just like when did it get to the point where criticism is not allowed? Now, if you're just straight up bashing somebody, that's one thing.
Right.
But I'm sorry, but like one person responded on my thing, said, you know, he's 65 years old. He's doing the best he can. What are you expecting? Pavarotti? David Lee Roth's never been Pavarotti. And I said, there's a long distance between passable and Pavarotti. And this isn't even passable. So let's not go to the furthest extreme here.
Devotees.
But it's just, it's like, come on, man. Anyone saying that, but everybody's wanting to cut him a break because they love the old Van Halen
stuff.
They
love David Lee Roth so much. I get that. You know, I'm the same way with Vince Neil. I like Vince Neil, so I'm always going to be the one to say, yeah, it's going to be great when he comes back and he only weighs 150 pounds, you know.
But I mean, I don't mind people that want to continue to have the rose-colored glasses about it. Fine. Enjoy it. But they have to chime in. If you ever criticize these people, they're like, hey, man, he's 65 years old, man.
Yeah,
and it's
is.
Like, shut the fuck up. Let me have an opinion.
It's not a lie. He really is.
I just hate that shit. It's like, oh, and here comes all the people criticizing Vince Neil, and here comes all the people criticizing David Lee Roth. It's like, and here comes all the people to his defense when he doesn't really need it.
And that's just like Ozzy or anybody else, you know, and in a certain respect, to a certain degree, I like that. You know, I like that people will come to the defense of the legends, you know, because of the respect they have for him.
That's fine.
But sometimes it's a little delusional.
But let's go back to a time before the internet when we would have these arguments amongst ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Did anyone go, hey, man, you can't criticize Axl Rose for being an asshole? No, you just accept it.
You
might not like it, but you're like, yeah, well, fuck you. But it was just, I don't understand this whole thing, like people having to come to their defense like they're their knight in shining armor.
I challenge you to a duel, sir, for the honor of Axl Rose.
I'm sorry, but a bad performance is a bad performance. So
there's no denying it. The video's there.
It's just like, I don't
get
it.
1 foot away from David Lee Roth's mouth, that phone was recording.
And it's like false equivalency. It's, you know, it's like, well, at least he's out there trying. I'm like, how is that good? That doesn't make it good.
It's like if David Lee Roth was 6 years old, that'd be all right. That'd be okay to say.
And then,
that.
You know, I even saw somebody recent, like, well, Neil Peart just died. At least David Lee Roth's still around to perform. And I'm like, what planet are we on?
Wow.
What planet are we on? Come on. Sure, I'm happy David Lee Roth's still around, but that doesn't mean I want to watch him do that.
Let's show some respect for the passing of Neil Peart and give David Lee Roth a break, huh?
Exactly.
Jeez.
Enjoy your time with your family, Dave. Relax. I don't get it. I'm sorry to go on a rant, but
that's okay.
That's been building up for a while now.
I still love you, Dave. Keep practicing.
I still
brother.
Love him too, but I'm not going to pay money to see that. Especially opening for Kiss, who's using tapes now. It's like, oh, the worst of both worlds. Pun
yeah,
intended.
I don't want Dave to have to use tapes, though, either. But that's that. I mean, is that next? I mean, does that at what point? Because Paul Stanley hit that point.
Yeah.
And Joe Elliott hit that point where the decision had to be made. When Paul Stanley had to look at himself in the mirror and go, it's time for tapes.
Yeah.
His little star child on his shoulder said, but Paul, you've criticized people for using tapes all these years. What a crash of conscience that moment must be.
And the devil shows up on the other shoulder with cash.
Yeah.
But
screw it.
But yeah, speaking of Paul Stanley, P-A-W-L Stanley, rest in peace,
yeah.
Came back on Facebook for one day, and his last tweet was, hey, Dave, I know a guy.
Yeah. Didn't take long.
Yeah. And then it was gone.
Probably got turned in by some David Lee Roth lovers, devotees.
Yeah, probably. But, all right, so we've wasted enough time on that subject. But this is a cool story, and I was happy to see this. A couple of weeks back, Dee Snider posted kind of a cryptic tweet saying, breaking my Stay Hungry era outfit out of storage for a good reason. You'll find out soon. And then it turns out it was a – he did like a little 30-second spot to wearing the makeup and the costume again to bring attention to the Australia wildfires that have happened recently and to tell people stuff. To donate to it. So that was really cool on Dee's part to do that.
That is cool and awesome, you know, because you look at that and go, man, that's freaking cool.
Yeah.
You know, anybody can get up there and be like, you know, they're having a lot of problems in Australia right now. You know, please donate if you can kind of thing.
But yeah.
Dee Snider took it to a whole new level, you know, made it like, hey, I'm giving you something awesome right here. Look at me. You know, did you ever think you'd see it again?
I didn't.
You know, so.
And he still fits into the thing, too.
Yeah, I'm sure
he does.
That's
pretty awesome.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not just, you know, hey, please hand out. It's look at this. I'm going to give you something really cool that normally you would have never seen. And now do what you can do to help.
Yeah. Dee Snider seems just like a solid guy. I mean, I don't think I've heard anything really that negative about him. He seems like a good dude.
Yeah. Definitely.
I respect him a lot. And he sings a little bit of We're Not Going to Take It. You know, it's a cool little video. I was like, that's really, I thought he was going to do it for like a Super Bowl commercial or something because that was everybody was guessing.
Yeah.
But this is even better than that. And,
oh, yeah.
There's to donate money to bushfire relief. I'll put the link into the show notes on here if you guys want to do that because, the animal population is down to almost nothing.
It's terrible.
Because of these fires.
Seen it on the news, you know.
Yeah.
And shout out to all our Australian friends.
Yeah.
I know we've got a few. You know, everybody knows what you're going through there, and it's terrible. You know, they're showing it all here, and couldn't feel worse about it for you.
Very sad. And Metallica donated $500,000. And
that's awesome.
Elton John donated $1 million.
Well, good.
You like him more now?
Yeah, I like him more now.
I thought Aaron and I were going to get in a fight over Elton John. The Decibel Geek was fun until it ended because of Elton John.
Thanks a lot, Elton John. Yeah. You wrecked Ozzy, and now you're wrecking the show.
But good on Dee for doing that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I like that. Very cool.
Recently, Michael Schenker Group singer Robin McCauley was in the hospital. Diagnosed with sepsis.
I know. You just played me that song.
Black Swan.
Yeah.
Yeah, his new project.
Yeah, it's good. I like
what
it a lot.
Voice, man.
I couldn't believe it. I thought after all these years, what is, you know, Robin McCauley still got?
A lot.
That song is so cool. You know, I listened to it when you told me about it. I listened to it when we did the episode. And then I listened to it again and again and then started listening to some of the other stuff. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the whole record.
So what's sepsis?
So I'll read a little bit about this.
Staph infection?
Kind of, yeah. He was getting ready to go on the 70,000 tons of metal cruise with Michael Schenkerfest.
Yeah.
And that is such a cool thing because I wish it would come to Nashville. Michael Schenker and all of his singers from MSG over the years.
Yeah, that's so cool.
How fucking awesome is that? But they were going to perform on that and he got sick as a dog and got put, and they didn't know what it was for a while. But he almost died from what I've heard. Sepsis occurs when the body launches an uncontrolled immune response to an infection, triggering widespread inflammation that can lead to organ failure, septic shock, and even death.
Damn.
As said, the 70,000 tons organizer said, due to unfortunate circumstances, Michael Schenkerfest, Robin McCauley will not be performing due to a medical emergency.
Well, I guess that's pretty understandable medical emergency, though.
Yeah, and then I've been following his, I think it's his wife's, posts on Facebook because he's been updating people and they said that the sepsis and then they said that the blood infection was E. coli.
Oh, damn.
So but at least they found out what it was and they started treating that and he actually did leave the hospital, I think, recently. And they said he was going to have to do IV fluids at home, but he's on the mend.
Oh, shit, man. That E. coli ain't no joke.
But yeah, and then I saw a lot of people in the comments saying oh, my brother died from this. A lot of people die from it. So he's lucky they caught it really fast.
If you're making chicken at home, you better wash them counters real good when you're done.
Yeah, you can get sick really fast. But yeah, man, Robin McCauley, yeah, because that Black Swan album, I think, is going to be one of the best records of 2020. So
yeah.
I'm excited for that. But yeah, best wishes for him to get better soon. And got one more story I want to go over with you. You got anything you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of. I think we've pretty much covered all
the big
stuff.
Ones, yeah. This is an interesting story. The former Judas Priest members KK Downing, Les Binks, and Tim Ripper Owens performed a full-length set of Priest classics with David Ellefson on bass in Wolverhampton, United Kingdom last November.
Oh, wow.
And on second guitar was AJ Mills of Hostile, a British metal band. And their two albums were produced by KK. And asked in an interview if he was surprised when he got a call from KK to be part of the event. Les Banks said, I was in Ireland when I got a call from KK asking me to do a one-off show with him, Ripper, and Ellefson from Megadeth. This would be the first time I walked onto a stage with KK since I left Priest. We had limited time for rehearsal as David and Ripper were only arriving for the UK a day or two before the gig. But all went well. We had a blast. The audience was fantastic and excited to see KK back on stage doing what he does best. A great set list that it included material that Priest had never performed live before, like Before the Dawn and two songs from the Ripper era. It's a great night to remember and a lot of fun for us all. As for the possibility of this lineup performing again, Les said, we all really enjoy performing together, but it was billed as a one-off, so nothing more is planned at this stage. I think Ken would like to perform in some shape or form in the future, but at this stage it's difficult as everyone has other commitments and it would be hard to get everyone available. Who knows? I guess it's a question of watch this space, but Les Banks played on Stained Glass, Hellbent for Leather, and Unleashed in the East.
Yeah, I love them albums.
So, damn, what a show, though.
I'm thinking as I'm hearing that, it brings me thoughts of L.A. Guns and Great Whites and all them.
Yeah.
That I hope this isn't the beginning of K.K. Downing's Judas Priest.
It kind of is what that is. I mean, right. I don't know if it's going to become a thing,
as
though.
You know, the rule of having two bands at the same time is that you have to at least have two longtime members in the band. They don't necessarily have to be original members, but they have to be longtime members. In this case, including himself, KK's got three.
I'll tell you what, though. I'd pay money to see that.
I definitely would, too.
I think it would be awesome.
Yeah.
Especially if Ellefson plays bass. I mean, that's a pretty great lineup right there. But
definitely.
I don't know. Priest is going to go out on their 50th anniversary tour this year. And
I mean, conceivably, wouldn't that be the perfect time for KK to pull something like this?
I mean, in a perfect world, KK would come back to the band.
Yeah.
Andy Sneap was great filling in for Glenn, but, you know, Glenn can't really do anything anymore. And if Glenn's going to be gone, bring KK back and have Richie on the other side.
Or why can't you do it where, like, because Glenn can come out and play a couple of songs.
Here and there,
right?
He can do, like, the encores.
So why don't you just, for the encores, have KK. I mean, if you really want to do it that way,
that would
make everybody happy, the fans of the new band.
Yeah.
You know, you can't call them the new band because it's been this way forever now.
Right.
But the current lineup, fans of the current lineup, and then in the encore, you get KK and Glenn.
See, and that's along lines of what I'm thinking, is invite everybody.
And that's a good way to keep KK from pulling some shit like that.
But also have Les Banks come on tour, play a couple of songs.
Yeah, why
Scott
not?
Travis gets a break. He comes up and he plays a couple songs from Stained Glass.
Yeah.
And also, Rob Halford said in an interview recently, somebody asked him, they're like, well, would you ever consider doing any of the Ripper era stuff? And he's like, yeah, I'd be okay with that. Why not bring Ripper out? Like, make a 50th anniversary tour, a real 50th anniversary tour, and invite everyone.
Yeah, let Ripper come out and do like two songs.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be fun. And I hate to say this, but I don't think they'd have to pay those guys that much to do it either.
No, but it would sure make it a pretty awesome event.
Oh, yeah.
And you know Judas Priest is all about giving it.
Yeah.
Giving it the way the people want.
I would probably see multiple dates if that was the way it was.
That would be super badass.
Yeah.
Oh, man, so cool.
Have everybody that is around that was involved.
But isn't that the same thing we said about Kiss?
Well, yeah.
You know?
Because we're nerdy fans.
It's the perfect way to do it, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
If you're really, truly going out on some kind of significant tour, whether it be an anniversary or a farewell, do it right.
And I'm not
especially if you've been around forever, you know, like a lot of these bands have, where you can bring out except for Iron Maiden.
Why?
No Blaze Bailey.
Oh, yeah, no, that doesn't need to happen.
Bring back Paul Di'Anno if you can.
That would be cool. But I mean, I'm not even that crazy about the Ripper era. Like, I mean, I like Jugulator's okay, Demolition's awful, but
for historical,
but it would be cool to have.
And I'm sure there's two good songs out of that. Those couple
Cathedral
of
Spires is a great song.
Yeah.
But just to represent it, because it's like, well, Rob's saying I wouldn't mind singing. I'm like, just fucking bring Ripper out for a couple of songs.
Yeah,
give Rob's voice a break.
That'd be cool.
I think it'd be great to have the people from every era of the band. Hell, bring the first singer. Bring it. Is Al Atkins still alive? I don't even know if he's still alive. I have to look.
But he never really recorded no songs with Priest.
No, but he wrote Victim
Priest.
Of Changes, and he wrote a few of the early songs that they wound up recording.
Well, you don't clamor to bring Vinny Poncia out on stage.
Why not? He can perform Cadillac Dreams.
Yeah, bring them all up.
Bob Kulick can
Everybody.
Bring his Grammy out.
Yeah.
And yet again, we found a way to steer it to Kiss.
Always. It always comes back to it.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I've got for this week. What about you?
that's it for me too, man. Hopefully everybody out there stays safe and healthy and happy. And like I said, especially with Neil Peart, it's always a reminder when we lose one of the greats is to cherish what we have.
Yeah.
The great return of rock and metal may be right on the horizon, but we still got to do our part to give it the push. So any band we talked about today, any band we've ever talked about or played or whatever, talked about, featured on the show, we want you to support them. Get out there, support the artists while we can, because they're not going to be around forever.
Care if we play some Rush on the way out?
No, I prefer it.
Okay, how about we do a Headlong Flight off Clockwork Angels?
Sounds good to me.
All right, rest in peace, Neil Peart. Have a great week, guys.
See you.